She's just closing it now.
Cool. Thank you.
We will open today with the daily word. Actually, it's two words, inner peace. I call upon the infinite peace of God within. I find peace in the beauty around me. A clear day, flowers swaying in the breeze, a gently flowing stream, all reveal the presence of God and reflect my inner nature. Lasting peace resides within my mind and heart. If that peace is temporarily disturbed, if I am feeling out of sorts about my life or the situation of a dear one, I draw upon my strength and stability by turning away from outer circumstances and going within. I quiet the chatter of my mind, perhaps thinking of one of my peaceful places, imagining the breeze caressing my face and hearing the trickling stream. In this quiet state, I connect with my source and begin to feel a settling calmness. I consider my life from its higher perspective and remain centered and serene no matter what is happening in my life or in the world. And from John 20, 26, peace be with you. And we will begin by singing Surely the Presence, led by Dallas and Linda.
Presence and one power, active as the universe
and as my life, God the good. And our welcoming song today is Peace Prayer, and it is written by Dallas. So here we go, and please stand if you'd like to do that.
Suggesting that you stand or fall.
no frightened musing of what that could be about. Well, voices, choices, spin a tale, gathering our essence that will not fail. Let's leave behind what we would never miss, forgetting all the pain and all the random loneliness.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, Fred.
Hi.
Hey, Fred. What's that again?
Hi.
We're all hugged and shaken up. That's good. Okay, so it's time for announcements. The ones I know are that this afternoon from 3 to 4:30, Circle America meets, and all that information is in your email. And on Sunday and Wednesday, there's an AA meeting that meets downstairs here, and at 7 o'clock. At 6 o'clock on Tuesdays, there is an Al-Anon meeting as well downstairs. And you can share that with your friends and family. There are some opportunities for readers for May and June. The schedule is on the door right out here, so you can check that out. And you tell me what other announcements you have. Joanne has one.
Just saying, you know what next Sunday is, Ben.
No, it's in 2 weeks, actually.
Oh, okay.
I looked it up.
Good.
So, guys, are you prepared?
We will be.
She's referring to Mother's Day brunch, guys.
Okay.
This fabulous. It's like every week they're asking that reminder. Mother's Day is not.
I know. Well, they've got a couple weeks to get it figured out. Yeah. And Tom, you had your hand raised.
I did. Just wanted to say hey to our friend out on the East Coast, Fred Schubel, who
hey,
is
Fred.
Making it back day by day from that stroke. And we
you got it.
Be here, Fred.
You got it. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yes. Any other announcements? Well then, shall we say our unity statement together? What now? Okay. We believe in our oneness with all life and the power of love. We teach universal principles and values as taught by Jesus and others, revealing the one God presence. We practice prayer, meditation, and service to be conscious of our oneness in God. And our song of joy today is Surrender. And should we stand up? Yeah, I think so. It's going to be
quiet song, but
okay, well, we can
but
stand and sing quietly.
We can find the tune and sing together.
Oh.
song there for you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And it's time for our reading, and this morning the reading will be given by Susan. Good morning. So this is dedicated to our last Sunday of the Power of Love. And this is Children's Ideas on Love. A group of professional people posed this question to a group of 4 to 8-year-olds. What does love mean? The answers they got were broader, deeper, and more profound than anyone could have ever imagined. So Rebecca, age 8, said, when my grandmother got arthritis, she couldn't bend over and paint her toenails anymore. So my grandfather does it for her all the time, even when his hands got arthritis too. That's love. When someone loves you, the way they say your name is different. You just know that your name is safe in their mouth. Billy, age 4. And from Carl, age 5, love is when a girl puts on perfume and a boy puts on shaving cologne and they go out and smell each other. Love is when you go out to eat and give somebody most of your French fries without making them give you any of theirs. Chrissy, age 6. And from 4-year-old Terry, love is what makes you smile when you're tired. Love is when my mommy makes coffee for my daddy and she takes a sip before giving it to him to make sure the taste is okay. That's from Danny, age 8. Love is what's in the room with you at Christmas if you stop opening presents and just listen. I love that one. If you want to learn to love better, you should start with a friend who you hate. That's advice from Nia, age 6. Love is when you tell a guy you like his shirt and he wears it every day. Nicole, age 7. Love is like a little old woman and a little old man who are still friends even after they know each other so well. Tommy, age 6. And 8-year-old Cindy said, during my piano recital, I was on a stage and I was scared. I looked over all the people watching me and I saw my daddy waving and smiling. He was the only one doing that. I wasn't scared anymore. My mommy loves me more than anybody. You don't see anyone else kissing me to sleep at night. Love is when mommy gives daddy the best piece of chicken. Elaine said that, and she was 5. And 7-year-old Chris said, love is when mommy says daddy's smelly and sweaty and still says he is handsomer than Robert Redford. Love is when your puppy licks your face even after you left him alone all day. And 4-year-old Marianne said that. Age 4 said, I know my older sister loves me because she gives me all her old clothes and has to go out and buy new ones. And 7-year-old Karen said, when you love somebody, your eyelashes go up and down and stars come out of your eyes. You really shouldn't say, I love you, unless you mean it. But if you mean it, you should say it a lot. People forget.
Yeah.
And that was Jessica, age 8. And the final one, a 4-year-old child whose next door neighbor was an elderly gentleman who had recently lost his wife. Upon seeing the man cry, the little boy went into the old gentleman's yard, climbed onto his lap, and just sat there. When his mother asked what he had said to the neighbor, the little boy said, "Nothing, I just helped him cry." And it is time for our meditation song, which is Deep Peace.
Of the Christ to you. speed in the perfect time in the perfect way. And today, the fourth Sunday, we will say our prayer together. Mother, Father, Principal, Spirit Divine, who dwells in all, we are grateful for your infinite blessings as we align with divine will to co-create heaven on earth. You fulfill all our needs. We embrace all of life, knowing you also embrace all of life. We know you are always present. Your love, power, and presence are right here, right now, and always, and so it is. And we will say,
Stage one in our journey. The Trip to Bethlehem, the traditional Christmas story, is a guide to spiritual transformation by Hypatia Hasbrock. If you're not familiar, in November, I made an attempt to cover the whole book, and I failed miserably, in my personal opinion. So we're going to break it down, and we are going to spend quite some time gearing up towards Christmas and maybe even beyond, as it is a continual journey. In February, we did some preparation. So we talked about a few things. We worked on the foundations, and so we were preparing. We were like packing a bag, purchasing plane tickets. We were going over travel guides. We were figuring things out, and there were a few main things. So number one, we learned that Bible stories have three levels of meaning: the literal meaning, the moral meaning, and the metaphysical meaning. If we need a refresher, in unity, we are free to determine for ourselves if we believe the Bible is factual truth. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. We believe in a metaphysical interpretation of the Bible. Metaphysical literally translates as beyond the physical. And when we interpret the Bible stories metaphysically, we find personal meanings beyond the words that we printed on the page. So, this was the other piece we discussed. That in order for the Jesus story to be a myth, for us to say that it is not factually true, we have to accept that a committee of Jews fabricated a man to be the Messiah, that they created a background for this man out of myths from the Romans, Egyptians, Greeks, Syrians, Hindus, Buddhists, and Chinese. We have to accept that they gave this man, this made-up Messiah, character traits that flew in the face of society, such as accepting a woman as equal, tolerance of non-Jews, friendship with sinners, and forgiveness of the Romans. And we have to accept that these men portrayed themselves badly, knowingly risking their own lives, and some of them suffering death, while steadily proclaiming faith in their lie. So I think that that's preposterous, perhaps even more preposterous than the idea that Christ truly existed. Therefore, I'm going to run with the idea that there is some factual basis to the Bible. Okay? You're free to believe as you wish. And the third thing that we discussed was that truth is more than mere fact. That truth is the invisible, eternal principles which underlie everything that appears in the outer world. Those were our foundations. Those were the pieces we had to kind of have in place, packing our bags and things for our journey. So, before we actually talk about this first stage, we've got to talk about stages and steps a little bit. Okay? So, this is a journey. It's a very personal journey. And you might find that when we talk today about stage one, you're like, I am so far beyond that. Awesome. Just know that we all circle back. Okay? It is a step, it is a journey. And no journey is linear. No journey actually follows the designated path that you have set it on. We all circle back, go forward, come back, so on and so forth until we get to where we're going. Success should look messy. So we're going to accept the process wherever we are in it, knowing that where we are is going to shift and change and morph as we travel. So here we are, ready to begin our journey. We've decided where we are going to find our inner Christ, just so that we're fully. We've booked the trip. We've poured over the travel guides. Okay? And now we take the first steps on our long-awaited journey to Bethlehem. Over the course of the next several months, we will prepare for Advent, the great adventure, the birth of the Christ within. The Christ, the presence of divinity that is within us all, whether we recognize it or not. And this journey to Bethlehem is a journey of spiritual transformation to fully realize our own Christ. So as you may know, in Unity, we recognize the 12 powers of man. Excuse me. We believe that when developed, these powers, or faculties, I've seen them written as, can lead to a life of unspeakable joy and glory. Powers are represented in the 12 months of the year, the 12 disciples of Christ, and by 12 colors. I'm sure there are many other symbols also. But one of the examples we have is, as Susan mentioned, our lovely candle here, our candle representing love that we celebrate in the month of April. Right? So, there are 12 stages to this journey. You see where I'm going?
Yeah.
So, there are 12 stages and there are 12 powers, which means that each stage represented by a power, right? Okay. Awesome costume. So glad you're with me. And so for this stage, stage one, we actually start with the 11th power. Anybody know which one that is?
Illumination.
Release. Okay. Renunciation. There are many words for it. So we start there. And at the beginning of any spiritual journey, perhaps any journey really, there are things that we need to let go of. If you're just going on vacation, probably the biggest thing you need to let go of is the idea of the perfect vacation. Because if you're waiting for the perfection of that vacation, you are not likely going to enjoy all of the other things that happen. So, in order to fully embrace what comes, sometimes we have to let go of some ideas. And for this particular journey, we have to let go of our inner Herod, the bad guy. Right. Herod is the only enemy of the newborn Christ in the Christmas story, and Herod resides in each and every one of us in some capacity, and that capacity is egocentricity. Isn't that a fun word? It doesn't mean the best of things, but it is a fun word. So this egocentricity is defined as limited in outlook or concern to one's own activities or needs. With children, we generally refer to it as self-centered, and some adults as well. This egocentricity, it is developed from the time of birth, because infants, they figure out what it is that they can do in order to have their needs met and their wants fulfilled. And what happens is that as we grow and we develop some habits and some patterns of being. And sometimes those get really wackadoodle and they manifest in these egocentric ways. Now keep in mind that there is no individual that's going to fully embody any one aspect of egocentricity. That would be one really messed up person. But we all have some pieces to it and some parts of it that exist in us, and they are part of who we are and how we developed, okay? These things that we do in order to meet our needs. And Hasbrock discusses the basics of Kunkel's four egocentric types. So she goes into some depth. I will give you kind of the highlights, or at least my highlights of them. So she identifies there are these four egocentric types. One, the clinging vine. Clinging vines believe that they please people by continuing to be helpless. They believe they need someone reliable, a mighty person or institution, to tell them what to do or to take care of them. To them, the world at large seems frightening and unfriendly. Adult clinging vines have little tolerance for suffering and prey upon the sympathy of others to relieve it. They gain attention by being and talking about their suffering and problems. They usually do not want advice about how they can solve their problems because they believe that someone else must solve them for them. Our second egocentric type is going to be the star. Now these individuals, they use coaxing, cleverness, and charm when their tears, rather than tears, whining, and helplessness to get what they need or want. Adults with star egos believe that getting others to notice, admire, and like them can not only get others to take care of mundane or difficult situations, but also that it pleases others. And they are convinced of their own cleverness and charm. They cannot tolerate indifference, ridicule, and they dislike rivalry. And then we have the Nero, or the tyrant. If you're not familiar with the Romans, Nero was a really nasty tyrant. My students right now, side note, are working on their Roman newspaper projects, and so they're having to do some research. And one of their options is to do an interview with a Roman emperor. And so it's lots of fun to hear them as some of them choose Nero, and then they're learning about some of the really crazy things the man did, okay? So, nasty tyrant Nero. So that is one of our egocentric types. And so these guys, they have a feeling that people around them are against them or they are uncaring. They believe they must wheedle, pester, threaten, or behave violently to get what they need or want. Adults with tyrant egocentricity believe that power over other people is essential. They have no interest in pleasing people. Instead, they demand obedience rather than cooperation. Believing that the world is hostile, they have little or no concern for the welfare of other people. These are our tyrants. And our final egocentric type, is the turtle. And this is just sad to me. I mean, all of this is kind of befuddling, but this, they feel overwhelmed by the apparent harshness of life. They become hopeless and accept whatever satisfaction for needs they happen to receive and give up asking for what they want or attempting to please anyone. They attempt to control their world by ignoring it. They believe themselves incapable of dealing with people and ask for nothing more than to be left alone and not disturbed in any way. They dislike being touched and cannot tolerate being stirred up emotionally. The sad one for me with that one is, as an educator, you're required to take certain classes, and one of them is issues and abuse. And so some of the things that you hear that children have been subjected to in our world, and you can see why it is that they might turn to this type of egocentric behavior when the world really truly has not cared for them. And so that's one that tugs at my heart. So as I said, each of these personality types, they've developed in a way to get the person what they need or what they want. And these traits and habits have been developed since birth. No one person fully embodies any one egocentric type, because that would be crazy. However, with an understanding of the egocentric types, we can identify a mixture of specific traits that may hinder our own spiritual growth. So we can take a look and we can understand which pieces we may have within us and know what it is that we need to let go of in order to actually grow spiritually. So again, is anybody in this room a tyrant? No. Nobody in this room is a turtle. We all hug and, well, shake hands. All right. None of us is really preening, shall we say, for the attention of all at the detriment to others. And none of us puts out anyways the appearance of being helpless and needy to the point that others must care for us. All right. But we all do have some aspects of each of these four egos. Take a look at ourselves, we can recognize them and learn to move beyond them in order to grow spiritually. The fact that Herod is not an admirable character indicates that transformation, what we are seeking in this journey, is a process open to everyone. The power of renunciation, that's a fun word too, gives us the ability to change the way we think by giving up inappropriate, habitual beliefs and attitudes. Renunciation helps us to cleanse our consciousness of erroneous beliefs about ourselves so that we may replace them with truth, with principles. We need to know ourselves as individuals. Then we can recognize and renounce egocentric tendencies, beliefs, attitudes, and feelings which block expression of the Christ without losing our sense of ourselves. The renunciation of egocentricity is the first stage of the trip, the final preparation in our journey. We've arrived at the airport. So how is it that we start this whole renouncing of egocentricity? Any thoughts?
Introspection first.
Ooh, there you go, some introspection. Right, yes. Mm. And where? All right. Haxprof lays out two actions to take. The first one is the use of denials and affirmations. I know that our friend Ms. Audrey talks a lot about affirmations. affirmations and denials, but just so that we are clear, denials are statements which declare that unwanted, outgrown, or negative thoughts, feelings, beliefs, and attitudes about ourselves, other persons and circumstances, or conditions are powerless to determine our behavior. And affirmations are positive statements which declare the truth about ourselves, other people, situations, and circumstances. With affirmations, we acknowledge the presence and power of God active within us and everyone and everything. So that is what our denials and affirmations are and the purpose behind them. And the second action, this is familiar, the burning technique. Now, this does not mean that we burn anything upon ourselves. This is not any kind of self-mutilation. We are not branding in any way. What is the burning technique? Tom's back there giving us sign language. Well done. We practice it at the end of every year, correct?
Right.
We write down those things that we are ready to let go of, and then we burn them in a wonderful little ceremony where we release those things, we renunciate, we eliminate. And in this case, Hatzbrock talks about how sometimes affirmations and denials are just not enough to get over those hurdles of letting go of those egocentric pieces of ourselves. She says, sometimes we've got to take that next step and we have to do a burn. Write those things down. Physically write them down and release them. Take that next step, the physical step, beyond just the thoughts and the mental stuff, but actually taking a physical action. And so those are the two pieces that are recommended for action pieces for renunciation in our first stage of letting go of egocentricity. So today, for our meditation, we are going to, well, at least I am, going to go through some denials and some affirmations. So that first step. So again, we are looking at releasing those egocentric ideas and thoughts and those pieces of ourselves so that we are ready to accept the Christ and move forward in this journey. And so our first step is going to be to do some meditating, and you're going to listen to me while I make out some denials and some affirmations for you, and hopefully you take them to heart and you find those little pieces within yourself that you are ready to let go of. Today, we are going to weaken the Herod within ourselves. We are going to let go of our egocentric pieces. The thoughts, feelings, beliefs, and attitudes of the egocentric clinging vine are powerless over my Christ self. The thoughts, feelings, beliefs, and attitudes of the egocentric star are powerless over my Christ self. The thoughts, feelings, beliefs, and attitudes of the egocentric Nero are powerless over my Christ self. The thoughts, feelings, beliefs, and attitudes of the egocentric turtle are powerless over my Christ self. I am a spiritual being living in a spiritual universe governed by spiritual law. God is the only presence and power in me and in my life. I am now free to express my higher self, the image of God, the Christ of my being, with anyone, anywhere. I am now free to express my higher self with anyone, anywhere. I am now free
to express the image of God with anyone, anywhere. I am now free to express the Christ of my being with anyone, anywhere. There is nothing to fear, for God is here. God is with me.
Thank you, Ivy. And now we'll take a few moments in the silence to absorb and reflect on the message. It's time for our healing prayer, and if you would like to focus our collective group healing energy for someone, you can speak out their name or hold them quietly in your hearts. Members of our church have requested that we send out healing prayers and energy to all people and animals displaced by war and natural disasters, the members of our communities who struggle to meet basic human needs, those you have lit candles for, and those you can mention now. We want to send healing prayers for Fred, Dixie, Hallie, John. Beloved Mother, Father, God, we ask for the highest and greatest good for all and endeavor to see them through your eyes, knowing all is in divine order. Amen. And now it's our opportunity to give. We're so grateful to be the spirit of generosity in giving of our time, talent, and treasure. We welcome each of these gifts from you as a member of our spiritual community. Let's say our offering prayer together as we hold our offering in our hands and hearts. Divine love, through me, blesses and multiplies all that I have, all that I give, all that I receive, and all that I am. Thank you. say our blessing of thanks together. We bless these gifts and send them forth to heal, bless, and prosper. They are evidence of our faith and belief. They do good work in the world and return to us multiplied abundantly, and so it is. And together, let's say the prayer of protection. The light of God surrounds us. The love of God enfolds us. The power of God protects us. The presence of God watches over us. Wherever we are, God is, and all is well. And it's time for our peace song. And while you're getting up and circling up, I want to take this opportunity to thank Eileen for her talk, Dallas and Linda for the great songs, Joanne for the fabulous slides, Tom for the tech stuff, Susan for the reading, and all of you for being here. And here we go, the peace song. Next week, Dr. Daria is our speaker.